Hi, good morning, everyone. So I had a request to do a recap synopsis of the opinion of the Rambam and the Ramban in this area, and then we'll get to this morning's topic, with which we will be concluding the Yud Gimel Ikrim, and next time we meet, we will do the postscript, and then we'll be moving on to something else. So basically, the big fundamental question between the Rambam and the Ramban really starts with what is Olam Haba? What is the world to come? The Rambam understands that the world to come, Olam Haba, is not some new world which comes into existence after this one, and we have a certain period of time while it's this world, and then the world transforms to be a different world. The Rambam says that the world to come is a place which exists right now. It's where you go after you die. It's to Olam Haba, and it's called Olam Haba because it comes after you go through this world, you go to the next world. And the Olam Haba is a place for the neshama alone, or what the Rambam refers to as the nefesh, we call the neshama, is a place for the soul alone. The body being physical, like all physicality, is destined to decompose in its component parts and basically at some point drift off into oblivion. It's going to cease to exist. And the only thing which is real and eternal is the spiritual, and therefore, and maybe even more specifically, the intellect, and therefore the Olam Haba is only for the neshama. It is a place where a person has the relationship of the based on the way that they in which they developed their seichel and their da'as while they're alive. They have that relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu after they die, after they separate from the body, they're able to go into that relationship. The Rambam therefore understands that Tchiyas HaMeisim is an intermediate stage between, not even an intermediate stage, it's kind of a temporary stage where a person comes back to life and then they're in this world and we discussed at length about exactly what the purpose is, but at least what the Rambam says explicitly, that they'll come and they'll live in the idyllic state of this world that this world has to offer. There'll be access to Gan Eden, and life will be tranquil, and they'll be able to focus on understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu and doing the mitzvot, and then they will die again and go back to Olam Haba at a higher level than they were before they were resurrected. The Tchiyas HaMeisim is a temporary state, which is, you know, the reuniting with the body is not the tachlis, it's not the end, it's not the purpose. The body is not meant to be part of the final star, of the final reward. So that's the basic opinion of the Rambam. The Ramban, on the other hand, understands that Olam Haba is a place for the nefesh, for the neshama and the guf together, the body and the soul. Man is made up of only of the union of those two. Without the two of them, you are not an adam, and therefore a person's life comes between the combination of those two, and a person's schar, a person's Olam Haba, also only comes from the union of those two. When a person dies, they go to a place which we commonly, which in the Ramban's terminology we refer to as Olam HaNeshamos, is the world of souls, which is somewhat of a holding ground where the neshama waits and strengthens itself in preparation for Tchiyas HaMeisim. The final purpose is Tchiyas HaMeisim. At the point of Tchiyas HaMeisim, Tchiyas HaMeisim is the point of transition into Olam Haba. When the soul comes back to the body for Tchiyas HaMeisim, the soul reconstructs the body in tahara, in purity, in a way that it has not existed since before the sin of Adam HaRishon, and then the soul and the body together experience all of the tov of Olam Haba. And the Ramban talks about exactly what the role of the body is in such an existence. He agrees that Olam Haba is a spiritual reward and a spiritual existence, so what's the place for the body there? And the Ramban has two explanations, one of which is a little bit more cryptic than the other, but the simpler one to understand what he's saying is that that just like we find that in even in this world, that the body can become elevated to an expression of a spiritual state. Moshe Rabbeinu's face shone with the light of his neshama, so the body can become a vehicle or an extension of the spiritual aspect of the person. So the body in Olam Haba will be the same way, and that's the Ramban.
That's a quick question.
Yeah.
So, if I understood right, so Pierce and Mason, since that hasn't happened yet, saying Avraham Avinu is in this holding pattern?
Yes.
Everyone's in this holding pattern. Moshe, Avraham, everyone's in this holding.
Yes.
Until Pierce and Mason was.
Yeah.
So no one's in Olam Haba.
No one is in Olam Haba. Olam Haba, according to the Ramban, does not yet exist. Right. So,
how does Rambam and Ramban define Tefillah Meitim for example, Eliyahu Navi? Do they consider that Tefillah Meitim, or do they consider that something completely different?
So that's a good question. I mean, in the Rambam, it might be the better question than for the Ramban. According to the way the Ramban explains it, basically, Eliyahu Navi and Enosh, those two people merited to reach such a level of perfection of their guf that their guf did not need to die, and therefore they'll come back for Tzias HaMesim. They went up to shine in their guf, and they'll come back with their guf. And the Rambam is a little bit more of a tricky discussion, because the Rambam understands that, you know, you're kind of stuck with your body. It's a vessel that's meant to be shed. So it almost seems like a punishment for Eliyahu Navi that he went up to Shemayim with his guf. Like, who wants a guf? It's your guf is an interruption. It's a mechitza between you and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So why would you want that? So, it's a better question in the opinion of the Rambam. At the end of the day, as we discussed, Tchias HaMesim is not really essential for the Rambam. So, however, Eliyahu Navi will come back for Tchias HaMesim, whether or not he'll just come back in his body or not. But at the end, he'll lose his body, because that's what everyone does. At the end, for the final Olam Haba, there is no guf. But that's the basic approach of the Rambam and the Ramban. So according to the Ramban, Tchias HaMesim is much easier, as we've discussed at length, much simpler to understand the central significance of it. It is the point of transition into Olam Haba. The onset of Olam Haba is the reuniting of the body with the soul, because Olam Haba is only with the combination of the body and the soul. As opposed to the Rambam, understands that Tchias HaMesim is a temporary state, which seems to be, you know, somewhat of like a bonus round to accrue more zechuyos, more mitzvos. Perhaps those are the best mitzvos that a person can do, the purest mitzvos that a person can have access to, and then person goes to Olam Haba after they die again. Alright, so that was everything that we discussed over the past few weeks. Is that a helpful synopsis? Questions, comments, criticisms, complaints?
So if you're an Ashkenaz run-of-the-mill Jew, we, in general, you're saying the yeshivish world accepts the view of the Ramban.
Of the Ramban, yes. The Ramban is the view of the Mekubalim, and even of the majority of the Rishonim. There were, you know, a few exceptions, but the majority view was always the view of the Ramban, and that's the accepted view. All of the, you know, the Nefesh HaChayim and the Ramchal, all are working with the view of the Ramban. Alright, so today, this morning, I wanted to discuss something which is not actually in the Rambam, but it is in the Gemara. This topic, and it's, I figured we'll just make one last point here, which is a little bit of a tricky one to talk about, as we'll see when we start, but we'll try and understand what we can here. So basically, we have here the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is the Mishnah, the source of this idea that someone who doesn't believe in Tzias HaMesim has no chelos in Olam Haba. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, "Ve'elu she'ein lahem chelek l'Olam Haba." These are the people who do not have a chelek in Olam Haba. Ha'omer ein Tzias HaMesim in a Torah. So the first one on the list is someone who says there is no Tzias HaMesim from the Torah. right? Now, those last words, Min HaTorah, from the Torah, are the source of a little bit of discussion. The question is, what does it mean, someone who says there's no Tchiyas HaMeisim in Min HaTorah? So if you look through the Chazal, they have Midrashim, and a few pages later in Sanhedrin, there's a Gemara in Brachos that we have later in our sources in Gemara in Ksubas. There's a number of places where Chazal have Drashos to find where the Remez is, where the hint, where the mention of Tchiyas HaMeisim is in the Torah, and they say, Hare Yesh Tchiyas HaMeisim in the Torah. They say, we found Tchiyas HaMeisim from the Torah, right? So the Mishnah seems to be saying that someone who is kofar in Tchiyas HaMeisim and Min HaTorah is a kofar, which Rashi explicitly makes this point right here. Rashi says, the Rashi with the little bracket around it that I put there, Hafi Garcina and Omer in Tchiyas HaMeisim Min HaTorah, someone who says there's no Tchiyas HaMeisim from the Torah. Shekofar b'midrashim, that he rejects all of the midrashim, the darshinan b'gemara l'kaman, that the Gemara makes later, minayin l'tchiyas HaMeisim in the Torah, where they say, where do we find Tchiyas HaMeisim in the Torah? Vafilu yehei mode umamin sheyichyu HaMeisim, even if he believes that the dead will come back to life, there will be a Tchiyas HaMeisim, ella delo remiza b'oraisa, but he says that it's not hinted at in the Torah, kofar hu, he's a kofar. Hoil v'oker sheyich Tchiyas HaMeisim in the Torah, since he says there is no Tchiyas HaMeisim from the Torah, ma lanu v'la emunaso, what do we need his belief for? V'chi meheichan hu yodea shekein hu, how does he know? He says there's Tchiyas HaMeisim, from where does he know such a thing? Hilkach kofar gamar hu, therefore he is a complete kofar. So Rashi here seems to be making this deal that the Mishnah says someone who's kofar b'Tchiyas HaMeisim in Min HaTorah, someone who says ain't Tchiyas HaMeisim Min HaTorah, even if they accept Tchiyas HaMeisim but they say it's not Min HaTorah, that they are a kofar, right? Now if you look right next to my little bracket, there's a little note in the margin which says Kasav Be'er Sheva She'ein Zeh Midivrei Rashi. The commentary of the Be'er Sheva and early Achron said that these words are not Rashi's words. So if we turn the page,
where'd they come from?
We have the Be'er Sheva. The Be'er Sheva was an early Achron in I think the 1600s. So he's the Be'er Sheva made he has a very extensive commentary on the Gemara, on Halacha. But so the Be'er Sheva does not make these kinds of changes without explaining himself, or these kinds of assertions without explaining himself. Yeah.
Sorry, does the word okay mean to uproot?
Yeah. So the Be'er Sheva explains exactly how he arrived at this conclusion that these words are not from are not Rashi's comments, and so we have we'll just read the underlined sections for the purpose of getting through it. But
who puts this in there? Is it one of the Gilyon Hashas?
So generally it was the Masoros Hashas who put these notes in. The Masoros Hashas, Rabbi Yeshaya Pick, or there's someone else who's also the secondary author of Masoros Hashanah, I don't remember who it was, but who put these notes in. So the Be'er Sheva says, Lefi Daiti, Lo Yatsu Dvarim Elo Mipi Kadosh Rashi. Says the Be'er Sheva, in my opinion, these words did not come out of the holy mouth of Rashi. Ella, rather, Eiz Talmid Toa Pirish Kein Begilyon, some student who had a misunderstanding, some mistaken student, wrote it in the margin, v'nichtav v'fnim, and then over the years, the copying over, they didn't have the printing press, and you know, somebody who was copying over one manuscript to the next accidentally put it into Rashi. It was written in the margin there, and it got added into the commentary of Rashi. But it's not correct. It's not Rashi, and it's not true. Umasha hiviu lefarish kein, that which caused this Talmud Torah, this mistaken Talmud, to say such a thing was whom he did not get a Mishnah Min HaTorah, because the Mishnah said Min HaTorah. Di'im lokein min haTorah lamali. Why does it need to say haOmer ein tchias amesim min haTorah? Just say haOmer ein tchias amesim. Or it could have said havalei lemer haKofer b'tchias amesim. It could have just said someone who rejects tchias amesim. To have a mashmash she'ino mojo mamin kav b'tchias amesim, which would imply he doesn't believe in tchias amesim at all. Why does that have to say that he says there's no tchias amesim from the Torah? The Tos who biyado says the Rosheva, this was a mistake. Ki kama chumos kashos yesh b'davar. There are many very difficult, heavy responses to this assertion. Chado, first of all, shaharei b'gemara kamar. The Gemara itself says, the Gemara asks, why is it that a kofer b'tchias amesim has no chelak in olam haba? The kolkach lama. Why is there such a severe consequence? Tana, who kafar b'tchias amesim? He rejected tchias amesim. Lefigach lo yeh lo chelak b'tchias amesim. V'chulei. Therefore, he has no chelak in tchias amesim. Mashma demayu she'enu modu mamin kal b'tchias amesim, which implies that he doesn't believe at all in tchias amesim. The line to that I'm skipping here, he says, for two reasons. First of all, just the words sound that way. But second of all, the reasoning that the Gemara explains sounds that way. The Gemara says the reasoning is because all of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's midos are mida keneged mida, that Hashem does things mida keneged mida. He was kofer tchias amesim, and therefore he has no chelak in tchias amesim. So it sounds like you were kofer in tchias amesim, therefore you don't get a chelak in tchias amesim. It doesn't sound like you do accept tchias amesim. You don't get a chelak in it because you don't believe in it. That's point number one. The ode. And furthermore, shaharei b'tanchuma reish parshas v'era ma'is yahach mishnah b'lashon zeh. In the Tanchuma, the beginning of Parshas Va'era, it brings this Mishnah, and it says the Eilu Shein Lochei Gol Maaba Aomer Ein Tchias Amesim, the Ein Torah Min Hashemayim V'chulei V'lo Nizkar Klam Min HaTorah. It brings this Mishnah without even mentioning Min HaTorah, and if Min HaTorah was of essential importance here, so how could you have another version of the Mishnah which doesn't bring those words? The ode, Shaharei Lakaman B'Gemara Ka'amar Mi'alazar Eliezer B'Rebbe Yossi B'Davar Zeh Zayafti Sifrei Avodas Elilim. In this point, I was able to falsify the works of the pagans. Shahayu Omrim Ein Tchias Amesim in a Torah, who said Ein Tchias Amesim in a Torah, so there's no Tchias Amesim from the Torah. V'havada Aisha Ovde Elilim Einam Modim Amramin Imchal Tchias Amesim. These people don't believe at all in Tchias Amesim. U'matchish Mafilo HaKabbalah. They don't even accept it as an oral tradition. Mipnei She'einam Modim Hasharat HaNefesh. They say that there is no remnant of the nefesh. The omrim shanefesh tamas b'mot haguf, and they say that when the body dies, the soul dies also. And even so, when Rabbi Eliezer says that he was able to prove them wrong, he says that I was able to show that tchias amesim min haTorah. So it can't mean that I was able to, that they were just saying that tchias amesim, but it's not min haTorah. But I was able to show that it is min haTorah. They don't accept tchias amesim at all, even not from the Torah. El al karmach lav davka min haTorah must be that it's not literally mean when it says min haTorah. Does not mean to say that that's the point here, is that they reject the fact that tchias amesim is from the Torah. El mishum v'tivchar lashon arumim nakte, that the reason Mishnah said it is because of v'tivchar lashon arumim. It was, this is a kind of an unusual use of this phrase. The phrase often in rabbinic literature means that it was hiding something deeper, but here he says it's like it was just saying it in a clever kind of way, but it's not meant to be picked up on. That's what the Be'er Sheva says. Yes.
This reminds me a lot of an argument whether something is deraisa or derabbana. Because we do have an oral tradition, right? And this whole thing, min haTorah, seems like that argument. Like, is it written or is it oral?
Now, this is a little bit more than deraisa or derabbana. This, we're agreeing either way that it's from Har Sinai, from Hashem. The question just is, does it exist as an oral tradition, or is it hinted somewhere in the Torah? That would be according to this excerpt from Rashi that we have, that the Be'er Sheva is saying is not really from Rashi. That, right, he's saying that it's important to know that it's not just an oral tradition. It is hinted to in the Torah. And he's saying, if you don't accept that it's hinted to in the Torah, so that's tantamount to rejecting it. Right, so...
But the Bereshev is rejecting that.
Well, the Rashi doesn't say where in the Torah, but he refers you to the Gemara later, which has a few suggestions.
But the Bereshev is saying that's not necessary.
Right. The Bereshev is arguing and saying that he's saying, I'm not arguing with Rashi. The Bereshev says he's not arguing with Rashi, that this isn't really Rashi. This is put in by mistake, and he's arguing with it. He says that that's not a correct inference from the Mishnah. Right. So the not that he's arguing on whether or not it comes from the Torah, he's arguing on whether or not that makes you a kofar for rejecting that it comes from the Torah.
So he's saying that it is possible, in his opinion, for someone to say, I don't agree with where you're getting the source, but I still believe in it.
I still believe in it as an oral tradition. Yeah. Alright. So a little bit further, at the bottom of the column here, and this is important. He says, V'gam ha-Rambam b'per gimel v'hilk of tshuva lo hizkir klal min ha-Torah. The Rambam, in his, when he formulates the ikrim in Hilkos Tshuva as the thing, when he lists the people that are kofrim, abikosim, and minim, so when he lists someone who says that there's no tchias amesim, he does not say someone who says there's no tchias amesim in the Torah, he just says someone who says there's no tchias amesim. The Oshar Rambam Beperk and Nizkar, Mona HaKofer V'Bias HaMashiach, but the Rambam lists someone who rejects Mashiach in the list of those who have no chilek olam haba. Asherkan Rabbi Hillel Omer Ein Lahem Mashiach Lisa Shekhar Achuru Bimei Hizkiyahu. Hizkiyah. That we find an opinion in the Gemara of Hillel who says there is no Mashiach for Bnei Yisrael because the merits or the deserving or whatever it was of Mashiach was already consumed during the times of Hizkiyah. Amar of Yosef, Rabbi Yosef came along and said, Sharle Mare, Rabbi Hillel, Rabbi Hillel's master, i.e. God, should forgive him for what he said, and he brings different things of how he proves it, whatever it is, not our point. Certainly Rabbi Hillel agreed to the oral tradition that there would be Mashiach. So that he just was arguing whether or not there was any hechrech, whether there was any conclusive proof from the Torah that there was Mashiach, that Mashiach would come. Because if not, the Gemara would not have brought the opinion of Rabbi Hillel. Kevin Shu Kofer Gomer, Shemach Kashafila Kabbalah. If he's rejecting the oral tradition of this matter, he's a Kofer, so of course the Gemara is not going to mention him. So this proof is a little bit of a more debatable one, because he's assuming a certain shot in that Gemara, a certain explanation of that Gemara about Rabbi Hillel, and based on that, proving his point. But okay, so basically, the Baal Shava feels that he has shown that this is not a tenable position, this cannot be what the Mishnah means, and therefore this comment must be a mistake, it's not Rashi, and you do not need to believe, as much as he will tell you, see the Gemara later, it's true that there are references to Tchias Mason from the Torah, but you do not need to believe that Tchias Mason you are not a kofar for not believing that Tchias Mason is from the Torah if you do believe in Tchias Mason. You just don't believe that it's from the Torah. Right?
But Rabbi Hillel seems to not believe that. I mean, he's saying outright, there's no Mashiach.
So you have to see the Gemara in context over there. The way the Bereshev is explaining that Gemara, Rabbi Hillel is coming to explain why there's a pasuk that he's coming to address that implies that implies Mashiach, and he's saying that pasuk doesn't mean that there will be Mashiach, because the whatever is being referred to in that pasuk really was addressed, not to get into the details, that, you know, by something that happened in the days of Hizkiyahu. So he's basically, the way the Be'er Sheva understands is, he's not coming to say there is no Mashiach, he's coming to say that this pasuk, there is no pasuk which says that there will be Mashiach, and there's no hakeh, there's no proof, you can't bring a proof that there will be Mashiach. Of course he accepted that there will be Mashiach based on, you know, Mitzah HaKabbalah, on the Masorah that we have, but that his point was that there was no Hokhafa, there was no proof that there would be Mashiach. That's the way he understands Rabbi Hillel. There are other explanations of what Rabbi Hillel meant, and there are even some who say that, take the Gemara Kipchuto, that Rabbi Hillel Taka actually did not believe that there was Mashiach. He felt that there was no such thing as that at least there was no guarantee of a Mashiach coming, which generally is assumed to mean that there will be Geula without Mashiach. Not that therefore Kal Yisrael is lost and abandoned, but that there will be Geula without having, you know, a Mashiach Ben David and whatever is involved with that. But all right, that's so discussion. So basically, the Be'er Sheva here says therefore no requirement to believe that a person is not denied something fundamental. If they believe in Tchias Mesim, just don't believe that it's Minha Torah. So Hizkiyahu, I'm bad with these dates, but before the Second Temple, I'm going to go with around, like, 500 BCE. I'm really estimating here, though. I'm really bad with these dates.
The Second Temple was...
But Benji's going to tell us in a moment.
Yeah.
Hizkiyahu.
Date.
Hizkiyahu.
No.
701 BC, according to whatever the first thing that Benji opened on Google is.
Wikipedia,
which may be representing certain calculations, which might be, you know, give or take 150 years. So let's say 700. Okay. In any case, so
that's the first time.
What? Yeah.
Edward Thiel concluded 750. So whoever
who?
Edward Thiel, he is
okay.
A guy from Chicago in 1895.
All right. So
some archaeologist, scholar, and missionary.
Yeah, a missionary. All right, we're getting information from the missionary now. So that's so fine. That's the let's call that more of a disclaimer, right? I wanted to discuss this. So the Be'er Sheva, based on whatever issues he has, is saying that this deal from the mission, this inference that it says Minotaurah, is an incorrect inference, not meant to be picked up on, and it's just said to, for, I don't know if you would call it a poetic expression or whatever it is, but it's not meant to be taken at face value. Now, I just want to point out that if we would make a slight tweak in the understanding of Rashi, which I'm not necessarily suggesting is the understanding of Rashi, not necessarily saying this is what Rashi meant. The beginning of Rashi is hard to square with this, but the Be'er Sheva's questions are all because he's assuming that Tchias HaMesim and Tchias HaMesim Min HaTorah are two different things. But if Tchias HaMesim Min HaTorah would be fundamental to what Tchias HaMesim is, then all of his questions would really fall away. And I just wanted to get back to that in one moment. Basically, if we...
Say that again?
I'll get back to it in one second, explain exactly what we mean. But if we would... But I just wanted to first say, if we would adjust it a little bit, and we would say that when it says Min HaTorah, it does not mean Min HaMikra. It does not mean from the Pesukim, which is what Rashi says. The Rashi that we have says that you're rejecting the Midrashim where we found it hinted to in the Torah itself. But if we would say Min HaTorah means that, as opposed to just that I believe it just because whatever reason I've decided I believe in it, meaning that part of the requirement is that I believe in it as part of what I've learned, what I've been told, and not just that I've decided, a person who's just decided, for whatever reason, they've concluded that God does not have a body. Good. You don't have a apostolic, you don't have a Masorah, whatever it is, but you feel that God does not have a body because that's what makes you happy. Good enough. But if you believe in Tchias Amesim because you woke up one morning and decided that Tchias Amesim sounded really cool, and from now on that's what you're going to believe in, nothing of a Masorah, nothing of Midrashim, nothing of anything, that's not good. Why? I could suggest that it would fit very nicely in the position of the Rambam, which we discussed 2 weeks ago, which is that the Rambam will tell you Tchias Amesim really doesn't make sense. If you're talking in a purely philosophical approach, Tchias Amesim really, the Rambam speaks this out somewhat, Igeres Atlia, Tchias Amesim really doesn't make any sense in the logical progression of this life to the next life, of your existence to Olam Haba. Tchias Amesim is kind of like, doesn't fit in so smoothly in that transition. That's why he says he doesn't spend so much time discussing it. It's a nace, it's a miracle. There's no room for proving it, disproving it, understanding it. It's just a nace. So if a person comes along and says, I believe in Tchias Amesim just because I believe in Tchias Amesim, so that belief is irrational. It's nonsensical. The Rambam will tell you that if you just believe in Tchias Amesim because that's what makes you happy, you're believing in something which is on its own is irrational, doesn't make any sense. If you believe in Tchias Amesim because you have a Kabbalah, and we have wherever it is, Pesukim in the Torah, Pesukim in Daniel, which are Mopiach, which say such a thing, so now I'm accepting it because it's a Kabbalah, so now, okay, even though it's on my own, I wouldn't have came up with such a thing, but accepting it Mitzana Kabbalah, so that is the belief in Tchias Amesim. But if you don't have a belief in Tchias Amesim that comes from something like that, so your belief is just, to borrow the words of Rashi, Ma lanu lemunah. So what do we care about whatever silly things you come up with on your own? If you don't have it from some Masorah, Mehechan hu yodea. How do you know? Who told you that there's going to be Tchias Amesim? If you don't accept it as Mitzana Kabbalah, as being part of some tradition, so then we're not really interested in, you know, the silly things that you can come up with on your own. If you don't believe in it in the tradition, then it's not a serious belief. You could say a step further that if you're only believing it, if you don't have it from the Torah and it isn't a rational belief, then it is by definition not a solid belief. Something which you just kind of come up with because, hey, why not, is not something that you will stick to, because you will not have conviction in such a belief. It's something you believe in because, like, you know, that's what, you know, you felt nice to you at the time that it popped into your head, is not something that you have a conviction about, and is not something that, if anything pushed you to question that belief, that you would stand up to. And therefore it would be primary to have this belief from a Masorah, and not just because this sounds nice. Alright, but that's I'm not going to say that's what Rashi means, because the first point of Rashi says he's kofer in the Midrashim, and he says it's not Remiza Be'oraisa. So taking Rashi's face value sounds like this is not what Rashi means. Rashi means specifically that there are psukim that reference about it, not that it's just that you have it from an oral tradition. I wanted to go, though, however, one step further and suggest maybe a more, I don't know what to call it, creative kind of reading of the Mishnah, that it's not that I believe in Tchias Amesim and that Tchias Amesim is min haTorah. It's I believe in Tchias Amesim min haTorah. I believe in the Tchias Amesim that is the Tchias Amesim of the Torah. What do I mean by that? So there is a certain theme which the Torah and Chazal, that their take, their spin, or their nuance on what the nature of Tchias Amesim is. There's a Gemara in Brachos. We'll see the Gemara very quickly. It's already getting very late here, but the Gemara says, this is in Brachos Tezvav Merbez, Amar Mitavi, Amar Yishayim, Maidetzim, What does the pasuk mean? Shalosh hina lotis ba'ena sha'ol v'otzerecha. So, not to get into the whole pasuk, but the pasuk says that there are three things that we're just going to look at the end of the pasuk. Sha'ol v'otzerecha. The word sha'ol will just translate as the death. It's the grave, death, something like that. V'otzerecha. And the holding up of the womb. What does the grave have to do with the rechem, with the womb? Just as the womb, the seed goes in, something goes in and then it puts something out. Af sha'ol, so to the grave, machnes umotzi. You go, someone goes into the grave and something comes out of the grave. V'harod dvarim kal v'chomer. And really, it's not just as, it's even more so. The rechem, where it's the womb, which is inserted into it, b'chashai, in secret and private, quietly, motzian mimenu b'kolei kolos, comes out in a big, it's a big deal. Sha'ol shemachnisim bo b'kolei kolos, the grave where a person goes in b'kolei kolos, there's bechi and mispah, there's mourning and crying. Einu din shemotzian mimenu b'kolei kolos, how much more so that will be coming out with kolei kolos, with a big production. Mikan tshuva, from here we have a response. La'omrim, to those who say, ain't Tchias Amesim min haTorah. For those who say that there is no Tchias Amesim min haTorah. So the first stop here, the Gemara is equating and really making Kal v'chomer the Rechem, the period of development of a fetus, a child in the womb, to the grave. Just as a child, the seed goes into the womb and then it develops there and comes out as a something to be considered something important, something chashuv. So to a person who goes into the grave as having lived a whole life, something, an entity which is fitting for to cry over, so how much more so that he's going to come out later with kolei kolos as something worth, something worthy, something chashuv. The Gemara is comparing the grave to the womb. And let's turn the page. Another drasha here.
And this is coming from Mishlei, which is Suvim. It's not even Liam.
Yes.
But it is part of the holy canon of the Jewish people.
That's true. Alright, so we have another Gemara over here. Also in Suvim, the Psukim, the Gemara says, oh, we'll get a pasuk from Malachim in here also. But Gemara says, end of the line here by my bracket. I accidentally put a little extra line in the middle of my bracket, so you can ignore that. Amar Rechia Bar Yosef. Atzidin Tzadikim Shem Mevat Vitzin V'Olin B'Yushalayim. That the Tzadikim are going to sprout and rise up in Yerushalayim. Shene'emar, as it says, Vayatzitu Meir, they shall peek out, they shall bulb in the city, the city being Yerushalayim, Ke'esev Ha'aretz, like the grass of the land. The Ein Ir El Yerushalayim, the city refers to Yerushalayim, Shene'emar Veganosi El Ha'ir Azos. The Amar Bichia by Yosef, Asidim Tzadikim Sheyamdu B'Malbusheim, that Tzadikim are going to rise up in their clothes. Kal v'chomer mechita. There's a Kal v'chomer, an A40 from chita, from wheat. Machita Shenikvara Aruma. Wheat is buried, unclothed, it's just a seed. Yotza v'kama labushin, comes out with several layers of clothing. It has the husk and the chaff and the whatever else is on the shell, all the different things which surround the kernel of the actual grain. Tzadikim shenikbu b'levusheim, tzadikim who are buried in their malbush. Achas kama v'kama, how much more so that they are going to arise in their garb. Right? So the Gemara here, not to get into the idea is, the significance of them coming out in their malbush. You know, if somebody wants something to think about, the guf.
The Gedolei Dor running around naked after Tchias Meis, it would be very embarrassing.
Yeah, would be very embarrassing, but the
is that what we're saying?
This is, no, this is even when they get up, they'll be clothed already. But just something to think about, the guf, the body, in many sources is often referred to as a malbush of the neshama. So it's possible that it means that, they will get up with their body fully formed. But okay, I don't want to focus on that point. I just want to point out the mashal that Chazal are using, that the Pasuk uses and that Chazal use, is the mashal of a plant that you bury the wheat kernel and it comes out and it sprouts and it has many coverings. So too the tzaddikim, they're buried and then they sprout. But Tfiasa Mason is a model of something being buried, something being planted, and then coming out as as something which is newly developed. Just like in the rechem, in the womb, something is inserted and then it develops and comes out a much more developed, an entirely new entity on a much higher plane of existence, on a much higher level of being. So the model of Tfilas HaMesim is this model of planting and then sprouting. And in the second bracha of Shemon Esrei, which is the bracha of Tfilas HaMesim, so there we say it several times, we refer to Tfilas HaMesim and Yeshua as Tzmicha, right? Umatzmiach Yeshua, right? Melech Menis Umachaya, he kills and brings to life, first the death and then the life, that's Tfilas HaMesim. Umatzmiach Yeshua, and he causes Yeshua to sprout, to bloom, to blossom. The process of Tfilas HaMesim is a process of planting and then blossoming. The view of Tfilas HaMesim is that this life, that life in this world, is the preparation, is that which leads to the development of a higher level of existence that comes in the next world. A person who believes that Tfilas HaMesim is just you're here now, you'll be back later, right? That's not what Tfilas HaMesim is. Tfilas HaMesim is not just that, you know, you live, you die, you live again. Tfilas HaMesim is that life does not lead towards death, but that death leads towards life. That a person is in a process in which your death was not the end of your life, but was the beginning of a process which leads to the next state of your life. Just like a seed goes into the ground and that seed decomposes to the point that if you dig it up, you will just see dust. There won't be anything there. And then out of that dust grows into a plant, something much more significant than what you put into the ground. That is the process of Tfilas HaMesim. The process of Tfilas HaMesim is that you put something, that the body decomposes. That is not, that looks in the physical look, in the surface view of it, that's the end of this life. That's the end of this existence. But the Mabat Shel Torah, the perspective from the Torah, Tfilas HaMesim Min HaTorah, means that the end of life, that death, was the stage, the process of growing towards, of developing into a future state, a much higher form, which is the state in which we have the fully developed relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is only possible after the Tfilas HaMesim, after we come back. That's Tfilas HaMesim in the Torah. Someone who believes in Tfilas HaMesim but does not believe in the Torah's Tfilas HaMesim, does not believe in Tfilas HaMesim, they just believe you're going to die, you'll come back to life, okay, it'll be nice, it'll be fun. That's insignificant. The Torah Tfilas HaMesim is Tfilas HaMesim, which is leading to a new level of existence. You're leading to something higher than what you have now. That's the Tfilas HaMesim that a person is required to believe in.